Great joy to be with you again this evening to worship God, to glorify His name. I want to tell you there is a habitation built by the living God for all of every nation who seek that grand abode. And you could hardly have a more appropriate line of a hymn for what we'll be talking about tonight. There are those of every nation who, if they don't long to be in the kingdom of heaven now, they will one day. And God built a city for those of every nation who seek that grand abode. We're here tonight, so we may be there after a while, but are we going to be there by ourselves? Are we going to take somebody with us? Who else will be there in that grand habitation that God has prepared for us? As you look at the screen, I want to ask you a question. Who are these people? Maybe you can't see the pictures all that well, but I doubt that anybody here knows anybody that's up there. We would say, well, those are strangers. I don't know any of those folks. What would you be willing to do for any one of them? Say, if they were in need of something, if you ran across them at Walmart or whatever it might be, what would you be willing to do for them? A lot's been going on at our southern border just lately. Y'all noticed that, I guess. People wanting to get into the United States illegally. Some of them seeking asylum. Many of them probably just wanting money or something. But anyway, they're wanting to come over. And, of course, many of them were separated from their children. And that's bad, but most criminals do get separated from their children, be that as it may. But we don't like that, of course, to happen. And so there's been all kinds of discussion. And, you know, I don't even know really what's going on down there. Tell you the truth, I heard another report about it this afternoon on the radio coming over. And you can't trust what you hear in the media from the right or the left. You can't trust what any politician says. So you really don't know what's going on in a lot of these things. It's sad. But I can say this, there are a lot of people who would like to come to the United States. A lot of people in the world. In fact, maybe most of the world. Certainly in third world countries, but even in some first world countries, a lot of them probably give their right arm to come to the United States, if not to stay at least for a visit. And you have to understand, to them, we are, you know, like heaven. We're not, but they think we are. They think everything's great in America and there's riches beyond compare and opportunity beyond compare and all that sort of thing. And I understand why people want to come here. I do. But as I said, I think that there'll be a time when they would all much rather enter the kingdom of heaven. Some of them do now. I want to talk tonight about what we do for the love of a stranger. I'm subtitling this The Importance of Hospitality, although hospitality really isn't so much what the lesson is about as about the love that spurs the hospitality. We've been talking about love this week, talking about God's great love and how we show Him our love for Him in the way we worship Him. We show Him our love in the way we love others, as we talked about last night, how important that is. And we're going to extend that tonight to loving strangers. And Thursday night, we're going to talk about loving our enemies, as we think about extending God's love as it flows through us to others and how important and vital that is. You might notice in your Bibles, first verse is Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 through 13. We're talking about loving strangers. And loving strangers is a basic principle of the gospel. If you think about it, in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 11, Paul calls upon the Ephesians to remember that you, once Gentiles in the flesh, who were called uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision made in the flesh by hands, that at that time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who were once far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. I want you to notice the words that Paul is using to describe many of the Ephesian Christians. I take it the vast majority of them had been Gentiles before they became Christians. And he says about them that they were aliens. We talk about those on our southern borders being aliens. Well, these were aliens, but they were not only physical aliens, they were spiritual aliens. They were both. To those who first received the gospel, the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem, they were aliens and they were strangers from the covenants of promise. And now what Christ has done in dying for them is that He's brought those who are far off, who were outside the borders of the kingdom, into the kingdom. Christ died for foreigners, both in the physical and spiritual senses. He died to include the Gentiles in the kingdom of heaven. In Colossians chapter 1, verses 21 and 22, Paul says something quite similar there when he says that you were alienated and enemies in your mind by your wicked works. The spiritual nature of their foreignness, if you will, is emphasized in these passages, and especially when you think about what Paul is saying there, that what made them aliens, what made them foreigners, what made them so far from the kingdom of heaven was their wicked works. Yet Christ, lovingly, because He loved the whole world, gave His life even for those who were alienated by wickedness. Christ died for strangers. Preaching to strangers and foreigners was Paul's mission. You might remember Jesus even telling him that initially when he meets him on the road to Damascus, that he's going to send them far off to the Gentiles. And Paul considered himself to be the apostle to the Gentiles. He says in Romans chapter 15, the latter part of verse 15, he talks about the grace of God given to me that I might minister, be a minister of Jesus Christ to the Gentiles, ministering the gospel of God, that the offering of the Gentiles might be acceptable, sanctified by the Holy Spirit. So he's working to bring Gentiles into the kingdom of heaven. In chapter 15 and verse 20, I've made it my aim to preach the gospel not where Christ was named. So not only is he preaching to Gentiles, but he's preaching to Gentiles who were complete foreigners and strangers to him. People who never even heard of Jesus before. That's where Paul wants to go with the gospel. So the gospel was something that was originated by Jesus Christ when he died on the cross. It was preached on the day of Pentecost. It goes to the whole world, a world full of spiritual strangers. And you see that the love of God is demonstrated in all of that. Do we love strangers with the gospel? Do we understand that the gospel is about loving strangers and foreigners? Love, the kind of love that God showed us and that we're to show others, obligates us to be what we call hospitable to strangers and to brethren, as we'll see in a moment. The word hospitality, as it's translated in our New Testament, comes from a Greek word, philoxenos, and it literally means a love of strangers. That's literally what the word hospitality means. Loving strangers or love of strangers. So anytime you see the word hospitality in the New Testament, that's the literal meaning of the word. You can do a little bit more Greek word study about how people thought of showing love to strangers in Bible times, especially those who were God's people. And not only is the Greek word in the New Testament suggestive of that, but in the Old Testament, those who spoke Hebrew, the word that they had in Hebrew for foreigner or stranger, the word was ger, and basically it means, when they said it, the literal meaning of that is a guest. So I want you to think about that. They're seeing somebody who they've not seen before, as a stranger, is from another land or something, and the word in Hebrew that you use to describe that person literally means guest, which is to say, if he's a stranger or a foreigner, you need to have him to your house. You see, so that implies this love and this hospitality that was expected of Hebrews. A lot of people may not understand that. We read through the New Testament and even in Old Testament passages, and you might think that, oh, what the Israelites were supposed to do is they were supposed to hate all the foreigners and they were supposed to hate all the strangers. That's what some said. You know, the Pharisees said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. That's not really what the Old Testament said. Certainly it didn't say to hate those that were foreigners and strangers. Even though God wanted the Canaanites and the inhabitants of the Promised Land to be cleared out of there, we understand that, for a specific reason. And yet, someone who legitimately dwelt in the land of Canaan who was not an Israelite, someone who legitimately dwelt in the Promised Land who was not an Israelite, was not to be hated. was rather to be loved and shown hospitality to. And so you have a lot of verses on that. Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 17. The Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome. And he shows no partiality or takes a bribe. He administers justice for the fatherless and the widow. And he loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing. Therefore, love the stranger. I want you to notice that this principle of you need to love like God loves is not necessarily just a New Testament principle. It's right here in Deuteronomy chapter 10. God loves the stranger. Therefore, if you're a child of God, what do? You need to love the stranger as well. That's the reason. And he goes on and says, you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You think about, under the events that happened in Joseph's life, the Israelites wind up sort of incubating the nation down there in Egypt for several hundred years. And for a while they're blessed, and certainly they grow, and of course eventually they come into the bondage of the Egyptians. But nonetheless, they were guests in that land the whole time. It wasn't their land. And they know what it means to be foreigners in a strange land. And God is telling them, you of all people ought to know what that is, what that means, and how important it is then to show love to the stranger. That concept is repeated in passages like Leviticus 19 and verse 33. If a stranger dwells with you in your land, you shall not mistreat him. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself. Notice the Old Testament not only said to love your neighbor as yourself, it said to love the stranger as yourself. That's not on most people's radar. But that certainly was the expectation of God in the Old Testament. In Exodus 22 and verse 21, you shall neither mistreat a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. That concept is repeated in Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 35. We learn that poor Israelite brethren were to be shown the same considerations as a stranger traveling from afar. It says, if one of your brethren becomes poor and falls into poverty among you, then you shall help him like a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with you. So you've really got two classes of people there that are being included in God's command. One would be a fellow Israelite who falls on hard times. You need to help him out. And the other would be this stranger or foreigner who's dwelling in the land, and he needs help, someplace to live or something, you take him in. That was, you treat them both the same as far as loving them goes. Everybody seeing that? You love them the same. And you show your love to them the same. So this is an Old Testament principle. There's no doubt about that. But when we come over to the New Testament, as we might expect, the principle is not only there, but it's strengthened. And we've already seen a little bit of that where Christ is dying for strangers. And Paul is going purposely to those who are the most foreign of the foreign to preach the gospel to them, the gospel of the love of God. So it's certainly true among Christians. Certainly true among Christians. Hebrews 13 and verse 2, well-known passage says, do not forget to entertain strangers. Romans chapter 12 and verse 13. We're to be given to hospitality, given to the love of strangers. And in Luke chapter 14, verses 12 through 14, Jesus instructs, he says, when you give a dinner or a supper, he says, do not ask your friends or your brothers or your relatives or your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor and the maimed and the lame and the blind. They can't pay you back. So here, Jesus is saying, you know, when you show hospitality, don't just show it to people that are close to you or people that are like you. Show it to those who are impoverished and who can't help you back at all. Be considerate with the kind of hospitality you show. I don't think he's forbidding showing hospitality to neighbors and friends, and even if they're wealthy or not. That's not the point. It's one of those, where's your emphasis? Where's your focus? Kind of commands. Not so much this, but more of that. One of those kinds of commands. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9, just as it was in Israel, we learn that we're to be hospitable to one another as brothers in Christ without grumbling. So not only are we to show love for one another, but we're not supposed to complain about it. My wife's grandmother was a great lady, very, very hospitable. She was one, like several of you are, I can tell already, who, you know, if there was a gospel meeting and there was a visiting preacher, she was going to have the visiting preacher in her home all her life. You know, that's how she was. And she did get a little bit complaining when she got into her 80s. And they have a gospel meeting, and she was talking to my wife one day, and she says, "You know, I love having the preacher in, but we've got some young women here that they just don't know how to show hospitality, you know. And I'm the one who's always having the preacher in, and some of these young women, some of them, they're not a day over 65." It's all your perspective, isn't it? But the love that we're to have for strangers is, again, the same love that we have for brothers. And it's interesting what this passage says, and if you're following the words that are being used here, be hospitable to one another. Love strangers to one another. Well, one another is not strangers. But you show that same love. You see, that's the point. Show that same love. So Christians in the New Testament who are placed in positions where there's exemplary character is required are to be the kind of people who love others. And it doesn't matter if they know them or don't know them. They just love folks. And they show that. They're hospitable. Elders, bishops, are to be hospitable or given to hospitality. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2. They're to be lovers of hospitality. Titus 1 and verse 8. The widow who can be enrolled for daily help or regular help from a church is one who must have lodged strangers in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 10. So you see, the requirement in the New Testament is much the same, even more so, than what you had in the Old Testament. I'm just trying to lay all that out for you as we begin to make some applications and try to understand, first of all, what this means in a practical way, is the next part of the lesson, and secondly, how we might be motivated and the reasons we might have for changing our attitudes about hospitality and reaching out in love to those not only that we know, not only that we already love, but those who are strangers, especially those who are outside of Christ. So that's where we're going tonight. Got two more major points to make. I only made the first one so far. So here we go. The practice of hospitality. Well, what does it involve? Well, most of us could say, probably if I went around and asked, everybody would be able to give a pretty good explanation of what showing hospitality is. But I want to go to the scriptures and notice some expressions of hospitality that we find, some of which I learned some fascinating lessons from. In Genesis chapter 18, you know the story. Three men show up at Abraham's place. It's the Lord in some form or fashion, angels apparently. Abraham is sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day as the chapter opens up in Genesis 18. In verse 2, he lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, "My Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree." Now, people have different ideas about this. I don't think that Abraham knew who this was yet. I think he figures out in a little bit. But I'm not convinced that at this point he knew who it was that he was talking to. He saw three men and he goes out and makes it a point to offer them hospitality. He says, "Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree, and I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts, that you may pass by, inasmuch as you have come to your servant." They said, "Do as you've said." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. And Abraham's, 90 years old now. He's running. I just see an old man running into the tent, "Sarah, we got company," and all that kind of thing. Make some biscuits or whatever it is, and knead the dough and all that. And he runs out to the field and gets a calf and gives it to one of the servants and said, "We need veal cutlets and we need them in a hurry," and all that stuff. But he hasn't fixed that up, and so he's running all over the place getting all this stuff together. And that's recorded in the next couple of verses. He ran to the herd and took a tender and good calf. It says in verse 7. He took butter and milk in verse 8, and the calf which he had prepared. And so he brought it out and he set it before them. set it before them, and he stands by them like a waiter. He's serving them. Now, Abraham is one of the most important men in the world at this point in time. He's wealthy. He's powerful. He's serving these men like a waiter. I think it shows us something about hospitality and its nature and the practical application of what it means. Taking people in overnight, maybe, would be included in what it means to be hospitable. A lot of great men in the Old Testament were exceptionally hospitable. Job being one of them. Job says about himself, "No sojourner had to lodge in the street, for I have opened my doors to the travelers." You were passing through where Job was, you needed a place to stay, Job's house was open. It probably didn't matter who you were. Providing protection was also something that somebody showing hospitality would do. We know the story there in Genesis 18 and 19 as it sort of evolves. The two angels in the form of men go down to Sodom because the wickedness there is so great. And they came to Sodom in the evening, and there's Lot sitting in the gate of Sodom, chapter 19 and verse 1. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. Again, as far as I know, he only sees these as men. They are in the appearance of men, and that becomes obvious in just a minute. But he said, "Hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go your way." They said, "No, but we will spend the night in the open square." But he insisted strongly. In other words, he wouldn't take no for an answer, and insisted strongly, and he brought them into his house, and he made a feast for them, and he baked them unleavened bread, and they ate. Before they lay down, however, and we know the sordid details of this story, that the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people from every quarter surrounded the house, and they called to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight?" So they see these individuals merely as men. "Bring them out to us that we may know them carnally." So Lot went out to them through the doorway and shut the door behind him and said, "Please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. See now, I have two daughters who have not known a man. Please let me bring them out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason they have come under the shadow of my roof." Please notice what Lot says. I invited them in to my home for their protection. They come into my house for safety reasons. And I will not allow you to do to them what you want to do. Now, there's something in this story that most people find incredible, and it is hard for us to read and even understand what is Lot thinking when he offers these men his two daughters in exchange for not taking these two men. I have two daughters, and I can only say it's extremely difficult for me to relate to this at all. I can't imagine what's going on through his head. There are some who suggested, well, Lot had been perverted by the people of Sodom. I'm not sure that's the case. The Bible calls him a righteous man. I think he vexed his soul day by day. I don't think his thinking had been so perverted by then. Maybe he thought if he made such an offer, the men of Sodom would come to their senses and say, well, you know, if he's offering that, maybe we ought to wake up. I don't know. But I do believe truly that I see something here that maybe we haven't thought a lot about before. But Lot is in the midst of showing hospitality, and that includes protecting these men. And he's going to protect them just like or even better than he protect his own daughters. That's what I get out of that. Because he's going to love these men who are strangers and show them the same protection that he would anybody he loved. We look at this passage and we say, what in the world is wrong with Lot, you know, to do this? And then I look at myself and I wonder, what is wrong with me? That I have trouble understanding how you could love a stranger so much that you'd want to protect him like your own family. What's wrong with me? Hospitality. Remember what we said about love? Love doesn't count the cost. Doesn't matter the sacrifice. Doesn't even enter the equation of what love does. Love doesn't count the cost. Hospitality involves being willing to share whatever you have, even if it's very little, even if it's a lot, whatever, and in between. Elijah goes to the widow at Zarephath, and she gave her last morsel of food. She says, he asked for a drink and a little something to eat. She says, all I've got is a little flour in a bin and a small bit of oil. We're going to go make this and eat this and die. He says, go ahead and bring it. And she does. That's amazing hospitality by that woman. Sometimes we think we don't have enough. But it's not how much you have or the quality of it, frankly, that's even important. It's the expression of love that's important. I've been very blessed in the last several years to travel to a number of places where people really don't have anything by our standards. I mean nothing. They don't have enough to eat every day. But when I come into a home in a village somewhere in some forgotten part of the world, if they're Christians, whatever they have, they want to give it to me. And those expressions of love from the people who have the least mean the most, quite frankly. I know why they're doing it. Because they love the Lord like I love the Lord. And they've been captured by His love. So, we need to be hospitable. We should be hospitable to express love. As we've been saying, it is an expression of love. We saw this yesterday when we looked at the meaning of love and how love is expressed. But notice again with me tonight, 1 John chapter 3. We'll go over and read verses 16, 17, and 18. 1 John chapter 3. And the text there says, by this we know love, because He laid down His life for us. We also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart of compassion from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Now I recognize that John is talking to Christians here about showing love to Christians. But we've already seen that the principles are the same, even if it's a stranger. And the principles would be the same. And love is something that's not just we talk about it, it's something that we do about it. What are we doing about the claim that we love strangers? Refer you again to Romans chapter 12 and verse 13. We're to be distributing to the needs of the saints and given the hospitality. We're to be, verse 10, kindly affectionate to one another. We need to express our love in this way. We need to realize that when we do express love in this way, there's a possibility that we will be entertaining a heavenly guest. Hebrews 13 and verse 2 that we alluded to earlier says, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing some have unwittingly entertained angels. That's the reason that's given for us entertaining strangers. Now, every time this comes up in a Bible class, somebody says, preacher, you know, are you saying you think we might actually have angels come to our houses today? I don't know about that. I really don't know. Here's what I do know. While it's perhaps unlikely that we would entertain angels, we may well possibly have a guest who is greater than angels. Do you remember in Matthew 25 in that scene that Jesus portrays for us of the judgment? The king is seated on the judgment throne. The sheep and the goats are divided right and left. And He says to those on His right hand, come, enter in. And they say, What did we do? And he says, well, you know, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you took me in naked and you clothed me, sick and in prison and you visited me. And they said, when did we see you like that? And he said, inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, you've done it to me. A number of years ago, a preacher was doing some famine relief in the country of Dominica, or Dominica, sometimes it's pronounced, down in the Caribbean. Very poor country, not very technologically advanced whatsoever. And he was going to a pretty remote place to help with some famine relief. And actually, they had to fly him in there in one of those bush planes, you know, and it lands on this grass airfield and all that kind of stuff. He was going to be there for a week or two and doing that work among some of the native people there. And the time was over after a week or two there, and he got ready at the appointed time to be picked up on that same grass airfield by this bush plane. And so he's waiting for the plane to land. And this woman, a native woman, comes up to him, and she's obviously malnourished, and she's carrying in her hands a child who's just absolutely wasting away with malnutrition and starvation. And she's holding this baby, and she says to him, she says, sir, would you please take my child back to America? And he said, I can't do that. They won't allow me. I'm sorry, I can't do that. And the child is, he looks at the child, and it's got hair falling out from malnutrition and just emaciated. And she begins to beg and plead with him, please take my child. About that time, the plane landed. And he runs out to the plane and hops in. And she runs out to the plane as well and starts pounding on the side of the plane, screaming, please take my child. Please take my child. And he said he was so glad when the engine revved back up and he could no longer hear her screams. He said he was halfway back to the capital city before he realized who the child was. But you already know, right? It was Jesus. Because inasmuch as you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. There are people in this world who need love, who need help, who need expressions of love in real, concrete ways. We must not close our hearts to them. We must see in each one of them the person of Jesus Christ, who loved us and gave himself for us. Now, we have the opportunity to entertain heavenly guests. We have the opportunity to be good stewards. In the passage we mentioned a little bit ago in 1 Peter chapter 4, I read verse 9, which says, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. The next couple of verses are very instructive as well, because Peter says, as each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. You understand that the stuff you have is not for your personal pleasure. God hasn't given you all the stuff that you got just to gratify yourself with. God has given you that to bless others in his name. Be hospitable to one another without grumbling. And the next verse, again, is what? As each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. It's not yours to do with what you want. It's his to do with as he pleases. If anyone speaks, let him speak as the oracles of God. If anyone ministers, that means to serve, let him serve with the ability which God supplies. That's why God gave it to you. That in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belong the glory and the dominion forever and ever. And then finally tonight, why you should be hospitable. Well, you need to be hospitable to promote the gospel. And maybe that's the biggest reason of all. The gospel is the gospel of love. It is the gospel to the stranger. And you need to show love to the stranger in a myriad of different ways, some that we've talked about tonight, so that the gospel may be advanced. I do not believe that benevolence is evangelism. I know some of my brethren say that, you know, benevolence and evangelism, that's the same. No, it's not. Helping the needy and evangelism are two different things. And they're made specifically different works when it comes to the work of the church. But Jesus did say, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven." So on a personal level, an individual level, it's extraordinarily important that we do good for the furtherance of the gospel. We can do good by supporting preachers who are going out to share the gospel. 3 John mentions in a commendatory way how the brethren there were doing exactly that, that John's writing to, 3 John verses 5 through 8. And he tells the brethren that they're doing a good job in helping preachers who've gone out. He says we ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. Fellow workers for the truth. So we have fellowship in the work of preaching the gospel. And then we can use our hospitality as opportunities to evangelize. I remember a number of years ago, and probably several of you, especially Jerry and some that have preached a while, have stories like this, I'm sure. But we were in Gadsden, Alabama, a good many years ago. And there was a young couple that was attending. He was a member of a denomination. She was a member of the Lord's Church, but not really all that strong. And we kind of got to know them a little bit. They were pretty regular visitors. And one week, she was going to be out of town visiting her parents back in Arkansas. And so he was going to be home by himself. And Sandy and I thought, well, we'd have him over. And so Sandy fixed her a big pot of spaghetti, you know, and laid all that out. And we had him over. And he just ate about 6 helpings of spaghetti, you know, just all this. He just loved it. And we got done eating. And I said, Mark, I'd really like to talk about the scriptures with you tonight about your soul. And he said, oh, he said, you wouldn't do this. You wouldn't have a man over and feed him a meal and then just use that as an excuse to talk about the Bible with him. I thought about it a minute and I said, yes, I would. So that's what we did. And it wasn't just a few weeks later that he called me late one night about midnight and was ready to be baptized for the remission of his sins. He's a faithful Christian still today, many years later. But those kinds of opportunities present themselves if we're just open to them, where somebody who you can help will also be interested in hearing the gospel along with that. And they're willing to listen because they know you care about them. Because they know you care about them. But here's what it's like. There are these two businessmen, and they're waiting for a train. They live in the Northeast. They commute every day into the city to their jobs. And so they're waiting on the platform for the morning train to go into the city. And they're standing there, and a young man comes up. He's kind of shabbily dressed. And he speaks to one of the businessmen, and he says, sir, do you have the time? And the guy just kind of ignores him. In fact, he turns away from him. And the young man comes around and gets right in his face, and he says, excuse me, do you have the time? And again, the businessman just turns away and totally ignores him. And so the young man walks away in disgust. And the guy's friend, the businessman's friend, turns to him and he says, what was that about? He said, you got a watch on your wrist, you got a cell phone in your pocket. It wouldn't have been anything for you to look at your watch or your phone and tell the guy what time it was. Why not? And he says, well, it's like this. He said, I'd have given him the time of day. And we just got to chatting. And we would have found out that we liked each other. And we'd be telling jokes and telling stories. And before you know it, time starts to get by. And I just tell him, you know, I'm enjoying this so much. Let's go over to the snack bar and get a Coke. And so we go over to the snack bar and get a Coke. And the relationship is just getting better and better. And finally, I decide I'm not even going to go into work today. And I just invite the young man home and say, let's have lunch at my house together. And we're just having such a good time there at the kitchen table having some sandwiches. And before you know it, my daughter walks in, and she's 20 years old, and she's beautiful. And they take one look at each other, and they fall in love. And 6 months later, they're married. And now, I've got a guy in my family who cannot afford a watch or a cell phone, and I don't want him in my family. Now, you say, well, that's a silly story. It is, kind of. What's the moral of it? Why aren't we kinder to strangers? The people that we see in Walmart, you know, they're maybe not of our economic status. Maybe they're uneducated. Maybe they're overly educated. Maybe their skin color is different from ours. Maybe they're Yankees. Why aren't we kinder? Why won't we show love? Why won't we open up? Here's what I'm afraid the answer is. We don't want them in our family. That's what I think. I hope that's not true. I hope you want strangers to be a part of the kingdom of heaven. So, who are these people? Well, they are all people who do not live in the United States. Most of them would like to live in the United States, but they know that'll never happen. But they are all citizens of the kingdom of heaven. They're your family. Like it or not, if you're in the kingdom of heaven, you're going to spend eternity with these folks. So you might as well get used to it. Learn to love them now. And learn to love their neighbors in those countries and their neighbors who've come to this country. Because that's what God does. He loves all. God's love is so amazing that it can empower us and motivate us to love someone who's so different than we are, who's so foreign to us, whose ways and culture and everything about them is so different, but in Christ we're united in love. I hope we'll go away from this building tonight determined to allow God's love to flow through us to the stranger. Thank you so much for your wonderful attention. I'm going to offer an invitation. It's the Lord's invitation. If you know the love of God tonight, that's such a blessing. If you don't, we implore you to open your heart. Jesus died for you. He died so you could be a citizen of his kingdom and spend eternity with him. There is a habitation built by the living God for all of every nation who seek that grand abode. Won't you seek it tonight? We'd ask you to come while we stand and while we sing.